also to Dr. Shisana. Welcome, madam. And Dr. Mesomakulu and team, TST. I see the chairperson of some spaces also can't see that far. Let me welcome you and say that we've got a very tight agenda this morning. I'm very confident that we are able to finish what we are here for. Let me just take you through the process then. In terms of the agenda, we are going to have some deliberations on the South African National Space Agency Bill. I want us to conclude today. I don't know what can hold us back. And we've got a matter for reconsideration from the Human Science Research Council. It's a small matter. I say I've given sent around that matter, the proposed amendment to members. We just asked the state law advisors to do one small slight amendment, and we can dispose of that one very quickly. And then we've got this report, GIPSA report, that was sent to members. What the rules provide for is for you to consider the report. It's sent to various portfolio committees for consideration, but also it's sent to the Portfolio Committee on Labor for both consideration and report. So you're not expected to report back to Parliament on this, but just to say that you were given a chance to look into it, to consider it. And if you have not finished reading it, you can still continue to read it. It just says that there are a lot of issues in the report that deal with skills related to your portfolio that you must be aware of. So I want us to go to note consideration of this report today. Mr. Gravel Hood of Gravel Hood Development, I'm sure that the name is known, sir. You've been sending us so much correspondence that some people were saying, hey man, what else is this man doing? You see, you've got so much, your systems are so going so well that you've recorded everything that goes around your life. And basically, it's your passion to deal with issues of poverty in the country and where you think some institutions of government are failing us. So we'll give you that opportunity to take us through today. So that's the agenda. But the way I want to deal with it, I want to introduce what we're going to do. Firstly, just to check that you've done the amendment, and then also to deal with the approval of the bill today. I've asked the state law advisor to basically go and draft something along the lines that take into account the issues that were raised in the last meeting. Let me tell you what I'm talking about. Well, firstly, let me deal with the HSRC. Yeah. There are so many of them. CSIR, HSRC, you know, these acronyms sometimes. Members, as you recall, let me deal with that one first so that you can know Dr. Shisana what we're waiting for. We had an amendment in this bill related to the appointment of board members. It was quite a heated debate in this committee as to which way we're going with the appointment of board. It's a long story that some of you have heard, not relating to this particular institution itself only, but many of the board. Parliament is not prepared to relinquish responsibility over the appointment of bonds. The executive contends that that's an executive function. Parliament says yes, but you can't not have a role in that. So whether it undermines the separation of powers or whatever, it's a matter that we are prepared also to leave to the Constitutional Court to rule on. Now, the law has always been saying these bonds must be done after consultation with the National Assembly in the city. That process has been very unhelpful. And in this board, you've been having a recirculation, recycling of some of the people who don't even do their job. Not attending meetings and not taking their job seriously, but they kept being appointed, reappointed to board. We are saying that we, unless the Constitutional Court rules otherwise, that matter is going to stop. That's the essence of the discussion in this portfolio committee and so on. Now, the amendment that was effected in the law was that the minister, in consultation, was the National Assembly must appoint board. And the minister prefers to do that after consultation. And we've gone through a long process with himself on that matter. Now, the president sent this thing back because there were two legal opinions that says in consultation is order for parliament. The minister sought another legal opinion that says after consultation is banned. So he wrote to the president to say, I'm not happy with in consultation. I want the separation of powers to be very clear. It was sent back to us by the president. So we either have to do after consultation and say we're happy with it, but these members are saying no. We're not going to do that. And they've asked for an amendment which is along this line. The amendment reads as follows. It's circulated to hopefully all of you. If it's not, it will be circulated. It says the minister appoints members of the board. And we're talking about the HSRC in the system. After publishing a notice in the Government Gazette and two national newspapers circulated in the Republic, calling upon members of the public to nominate persons contemplated in subsection as related to A and B, that is the board members. Appoint a panel of experts to compile a short list of not more than 20 persons from the nominees referred to in paragraph A above, and the chairperson of the panel submits a list of the shortlisted candidates together with their CVs to the National Assembly for approval. In other words, in this instance, the institution is looking for about 6 to 9 people. But my memory says we will check here. We give the minister 20 to choose from. That's basically what we say. But we want to ensure that the vet pool that we're giving, it's a pool that we help you. All right? Now, what we've asked the parliamentary law advisors to add one C or something that says the panel must report to the minister who gives us that here to approve. So that's all we are trying to do. After that is done, we'll approve this, and this is a closed matter for now, and the report will be sent to the president, and I'm sure the legal gurus in the presidency can do whatever they have to do. Either ask the president to sign, but what the constitution provides for is that if parliament, let me use this word, is still intransigent on this matter, then the constitutional court does go. The advice that I got from the parliamentary legal advisors was to say, let's send in consultation as it is back to the president, so that this matter, once and for all, can be resolved by the Constitutional Court. We said, no, let's not be that cruel. Let's try to do something else, to say, if you want to separate these powers, let the minister do the following, and let's do the following. And that's where we are now. So, madam, this matter will be resolved in the next, hopefully, 10 minutes. Okay. Are we? Yes, madam. So after we've done the law, we go to Parliament and we'll get the report. He's got some officials here. You're one of them. No, no, you're going to report to him as we say. Okay. Yeah, you go and tell him that, listen, those people, they're not budging. Okay? All right. So that's the one matter that we must conclude today. The other matter relates to the answer. Let me just take you through. I hope you've got the bird in front of you. All of you. All right? We've got a quorum in this meeting. We're able to vote on this thing now today and finish it. What we don't have is other political parties that just gone AWOL. One sent an apology, the other one is in Zimbabwe trying to sort out the runoff there and so on. The other one, I'm not sure where they are. So, but it's just a matter that we've got to be aware of. If we take, let me just go page by page to ensure that we read from the same stuff. You've received this amended bill, okay? Which basically says there's nothing on the long title that is changing. And then on page 3 of that bill, let's just travel this together. All right. You've got an additional amendment which deals with satellite imagery. Okay? That's something that is new. And obviously the other matters relate to cross-referencing. In the previous one, we were talking about the chief executive officer in terms of section 15. Now in this one is section 14, the top one. Alright? There is nothing else that changed on that page except for that inclusion. Okay? Right. And then on page 4, the appointment of all. We've asked the parliamentary law advisors to draft this in line with what we are going to agree today. Alright? They are busy with that, and that we can deal with later. So that's where we are at the moment, and then we are going to leave. That is the changes we are going to make. And then on the same page 4 and page 5, you've got that whole clause, clause 8, that has been amended, changed. In other words, in the old bill, it's deleted. And you've got a new clause 8 coming in. Alright. And there is a clause that deals with the disqualification provision and removal of board members. Now, on page 5, except for those, that's the overlap, nothing else changed. We go to page 6, and we're talking clause 14, the whole of clause 14 is deleted. Clause 14 that dealt in the previous law was the governance committee. So it doesn't hold in this one. In the HSRC, they still have the governance committee. Sunspace doesn't, I mean, Pansa doesn't want the governance committee, so if then you don't want it, we're going to take it away. Alright? On page 7, there is nothing that changes. And the same goes to page 8. Now, in the amendment, we go up to the short title, which is section 20. Or should I say clause 20 at this stage? Alright? In the previous one, we went up to 21. Now we've taken all the provisions out of the governance committee. Are we reading from the same page? Okay. We're not going to do anything to the memorandum, except that the department will have to draft this memorandum in line with the amendment. You see that the memorandum still has the old provisions that you've taken out. Okay. Now, in that we're reading from the same page, from the same book. Let me I'm just going to call for adoption later after I've got that amendment. Can I just check that on page 3, except for the amendments that are given, there is nothing else from members that needs to be taken care of. Let me start with the whole definition section. And just to double check that the department is quite happy with the space science definition. You comfortable? Okay, that's fine. Members, anything on the definition? Right. Establishment of the of SANFA. We just for the record, we've raised the issue. I see that in terms of section 2, with the PFMA, we've raised some issues of funding with you, and your engagement with Treasury on this matter and the funding in general. Informed us that you've got a report that is still sensitive for them. We are going to want you to come and give some feedback on this matter of the funding of this whole space science technology and so on. And secondly, section 3, the question about the strategy itself, that is in a draft form, we are going to hold you to that. You know, some members were saying that it's a leap of good faith, it's a leap of faith for this parliament to adopt a law where there is no strategy approved by cabinet. So basically, we are giving you the benefit of the doubt. But this is not going to be the norm, whereby cabinet has not got no policy that is approved, but the law is brought here. I'm just raising this point for you to understand where we move from. And also that, at least so far, we've had a very good relationship with the department in terms of trying to get things done. So we're giving you that benefit of the doubt. I don't know if anything from members before I pass that point, is there any comment? Yes or no?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Kumela Lingima from the Office of the State Law Advisors. Just one thing on that point, Chair, I just would like to bring to the attention of the committee is that not that it will create serious problems, but it should be noted that the Space Affairs Act that is referred to in that section, in that clause 3, for the determination of the policy together with the strategy. The Space Affairs Act, when it was promulgated as from the portfolio of trade and industry. So maybe the committee should note that together with the department that when they do this, maybe they should look into that.
No, so thank you very much for bringing that to our attention. Remember, can I have the page?
Briefly, I think in addition to having the report to come back to us and briefing us on funding events, it would be very useful once the policy is important and accepted by Captain.
Page four, I've got something here that I haven't been able to look into. I think that's never speculation. I must say, I just got it hot from the press now. I haven't been able to. So it's still very hot, actually. I haven't been able to read through them. But the proposal goes as follows in terms of the appointment of board. It says that the minister appoints members of the board after publishing the same thing that we said, appointing a panel, which gives not more than 30 people, fair chance of this uplift the balance, sir? So just before you take it further, this one is the HSRC, this one is the Samsung. So our thinking then, please give the members first, okay, you'll get later. Okay, let's go to Samsung first. Bring the Samsung on the side. Samsung. No, for the members who don't have the time. For two members who don't have the time. And HSR. All right. Then what you see on the sensor is that it was brought more or less in line what is a prospective approval for the HSRC. So that clause 7 is going to be amended, section 1 to subsection A, B, C, and D. It's going to be amended to say the following: say the monitor appoints the board after publishing the notice in the newspaper, appoints a panel, and we've got not more than 30 there. The chairperson of the panel will submit to the minister. The minister will submit to the will submit to the National Assembly for approval, and the National Assembly submits to the minister and approves shortly. The rest is basically what is in the law, extent, how the panel should act, and what the board must consist of. Alright, we're going to return to this one. Actually a provision that is in other legislation so far, and we have never had a comeback so far. So I'm not uncomfortable, but you raise a very important point. Whether if you translate this, what does it mean in practice and so on. If you see, look into the HSRC file, it's called a provision. And there's never been contestation, just to give an example. So the only change in this law is basically that appointment procedure. Let's return to it. I'm giving members a chance to reflect on this matter. And the rest members look very, very straightforward. The rest look very straightforward. Now, I want to allow Dr. Shikara to leave and go and catch a flight. She's here for the HSRC. Alright? just check what the lawyers who are here, and the legal, if I say lawyers who are here, I mean the lawmakers and those who can put it on. If they are happy with the provision of the HSRC, or is there anything that you are concerned about? So in other words, when the minister appoints the HSRC board, he or she appoints this board after publishing the contract and two letters of newspapers, and after appointing a panel, they will complete a short list of not more than 20, and the chairperson of that board will then submit a short list of 10 minutes to what they are CVs to the minister, who must submit that to the National Assembly. Okay? If in that case, there are people that we don't like, we kick them out of the shop. That's what we do. Okay? And the National Assembly will then support the minister in a push of them. Let me show what the legal people are saying, and then I'll come to them. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. 1536.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly following that one. Say, if maybe we could look at it that the panel that will be the shortlisted candidate will then be submitted to the National Assembly for approval. The National Assembly must approve this. And does this mean then that the minister must take those approved candidates as is? Or what is the position? That C is not as clear and straightforward. And also we should understand and put it noted that National Assembly there, why are we moving away from Parliament to include both National Assembly and the NCOP as the Constitution defines it? Why specifically have the National Assembly and exclude the other house?
This law is a section 75.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay, sorry. That's why, so nothing to do with some. So there's no excluding me, I think we members, can you just check if this is not surprising if we take C, F, E, and not have T. In other words, the chairperson submits a note to the minister who must submit this to the National Assembly for approval. On the,
because I think we try to clarify what the National Assembly is doing.
Parliament direct an assessment to take more meaningful or less effective consultation, because otherwise in way it was, you were just expected to rub a step what the minister has already consulted with another minister and another house. So the way it is now, I think it gives effect to meaningful consultation. Basically, clearly, the minister appoints the members of the board, but parliament or the national assembly has given itself the opportunity to go over the conflict, to look at their cities and to say whether or not it is approved.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. What's another hand? What do you have
to do? I think we need to we had a discussion on the level of consultation with the minister. We have 7 for uniformity. And I would expect that from now on, a purpose of our work is done in uniform now. And I note that the appointment of board is sensible, and section 2, which has not appeared on the appointment about the appointment of KFOC, and I was wondering why that is. And as I said, it should not strive for uniformity, and it was not the descriptions of section 2 and 4 to be sensible.
We come to I don't want members to start going from that one to that one now. Let's stick to the first one, and then what we do here, we also go in council. I just talked to you because I didn't want members to go to council for now, but you can still take that one in council.
Okay.
Something should have happened. 14 or 10, you know, to make the
Thank you very much. I was sitting here speaking and then something was speaking. Thanks for bringing that to our attention. Now, grammatic, after the corrections and those grammatical improvements, there is a slight amendment at the end that says, after the National Assembly has submitted to the minister an approved shortlist, from which you will select. The minister appoints members of the board after the National Assembly has submitted an approved shortlist from which something must be read it from the top. So that then it becomes a repetition. Can I just ask the clever lawyers here just to repeat and correct it? Just a sentence. That goes the last one. Everything else after the correction is fine. But just say that the minister appoints members of the board after, and then you just drop D in line with that. No, we don't have to talk now. Correct it first. Don't think a lot. Just clear it first and give your corrected one. Because I want us to...
Yeah, it says the minister appoints members of the board after the National Assembly has submitted to the minister in a short list. Or has submitted the short list to the minister.
Give me two versions. Give me one.
After you have submitted the short list to the minister. No.
That's why I'm giving you another chance. Have you got it through?
What I'm concerned with is that the inference that may be made that the ministers left no leeway. So the shortest of the dates would be that it allows for the consideration of information. If you take that opening remark that the minister put in the board on that, and then we go to the National Assembly and submit it to the minister and approve shortlist for his consideration. That will still allow the executive to put the shortlist. That's not from the 20 and you've already gone down to the 9.
I hear your concern. What do you want us to do to address it? Do you want us to give a number and approve shortlist of 1.5 times the number? To avoid from? You're battling. And to the extent that you're battling, I'm going to give you another 5 minutes to think it through. Okay? Let's start with a clever thing to advise you.
Thank you, sir. I want to suggest something that could look to both C and D. It's a suggestion that might be taking back the committee because you might need to consider it. I want to suggest that if on the panel that the minister has to form, shouldn't those National Assembly members form part of that panel? And then when the final shortlist is then dealt with or compiled, it's compiled with the approval of both those members that would be part of the panel, and then it's a list that should go to the minister for final approval.
It's a good suggestion, but the answer is no. Okay? Yeah, let's leave that. Let's leave the minister and his panel to do their thing and bring it here. Okay? That's fine. Is anybody having a corrected D? I'll come back to you.
Okay. Chapter 3, the minister appoints members of the board after the National Assembly has submitted to the minister an approval. And that's an axiom, because you are saying 20, there will be 20 people that will be in the top 10, right? And then the real thing is that you will appoint 9. So the minister has a choice of appointing 9 people out of the 20 as the top 10. Is that correct?
It is impressive, that's what we have in mind. But what this is worried about is that what this will give. And when I say short rest of mine, I think that's what she's talking about. All.
Thank you. which is the next suggest that you have in excess of the 9 and 11?
Now, I wouldn't come back to you for the last time. You gave me a proposal, was written to us. I want to know what you do with consolidation now. I'll come back to you. So that's why I'm saying, don't think on your feet now. We spent a lot of time on this thing. We should make it easier for us to deal for the other one. Okay? I don't see any hands this side. Professor, I saw your hands. Let me read it now. Let me read it. The final one that you seem to agree upon. The minister appoints members of the board after the National Assembly has submitted an approved short list from which to select. Okay. Now, you agree?
Yes.
Then the minister appoints members of the board after publishing a notice in the Government Gazette and two national newspapers circulating in the Republic, calling upon members of the public to nominate persons contemplated in Section 2A and B. Appointing a panel of experts to compile a short list of not more than 20 persons from the nominees referred to in paragraph A above. The chairperson of the panel has submitted a short list,
a list of shortlisted candidates.
So that's fine. Nice. Good that I read it loud, so that the chairperson of the panel has submitted a list of shortlisted candidates together with their CVs to the CVs to the minister who must submit to the National Assembly for approval. And the National Assembly has submitted an approved short list from which the minister is selected. These sounds very fine. Can you be able to speak and just check if it's just a grammatical matter or just? Yes, madam.
Why don't you, the chairperson of the panel should be there. So you say candidate. So you say candidate.
The chairperson of the panel has submitted a short list of candidates together with their CV.
Yeah.
Is that fine? You all agree. You wish me, if this matter goes to the Constitutional Court, you are going to call all of your members. Can I call for a dust of the amendment? For the HSRC. in my presence.
Must have taken an hour to deal with one small matter.
For the good.
Which makes it easier.
For the next one.
Alright. The clever lawyer, are you doing the next one for us? In line with the corrections and things that we've done?
Can we just correct this thing? There is a page 7 that is missing in the amended bill of members. Can we do this? Members? Yeah, we are going to just suspend getting to this. that the carriage call receiver should do just one in line with what you agree. And also to ensure that members get paid sense. So that when this thing comes back, we just approve this one. We just have the appointment of the board to do and the rest look fine. Okay? On this one. I'm going to give that opportunity to Mr. Gravelwood to. Are you writing something?
No, I'm
fine. No, no, not you. I'm seeing Dr. Nakamakulis.
Okay, on our booking the sector advisors room. Talk with it before they go in Parliament. Section 13 on the appointment of board committee, that it says subject to Section 8, and we would like that subject to Section 8 more. Because for the committee, as we said, we would like to have international people participating in the in those committees, and Section 8 does not allow that's the only problem.
I'm sorry, can you just refer to that one again?
Section 8 for the appointment of the board limits the appointment to residents of the Republic of South Africa, citizens of the Republic of South Africa. And for the board committee, we would like to relax that restriction. So that we can have participating in the board committee.
Okay, you want to have a formulation that takes that particular thing into account. But if you rule out Section 8 altogether, you then having people who don't qualify the mentor. Those under habilitated or incapacitated ones, members of parliament and things like those. So we've got to try and do both. We've got to capture this thing.
Just raise your concern, but if you tell me that subject to just accommodate the internet, I don't know how we can do that without moving.
Justice.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think that if we look at three, we are looking about remuneration. We are talking about remuneration. So I suggest that Section 8 was actually a misprint. It was supposed to be subject to Section 10 and then leave the committee appointment open to whoever may come with the expertise in that context field. Section 8 should have been Section 10 instead of 8. That way it doesn't talk to Clause 8, which talks about the qualification, who could be and could not be part of the board, of the committee that would be accepted. Section 2C, who must be paid such allowances as the minister may determine, subject to Section 10. And that way we do not limit who could be part of the committee.
You see, I hear what you're saying, that it's inappropriately, it's inappropriate letters that come to you in terms of Section 8 or even in Section 10. Then it's a repetition.
Yes.
Why don't you take it out altogether? If you take it out all together, then it doesn't say anything. My suggestion that I say I want you to consider is just to take the rest of the subjective number out altogether. that he doesn't restrict the board. Section 10 talks about remuneration and things like those. It's okay. It doesn't have to be repeated there. And secondly, should whoever in the subcommittees appoint people who don't qualify, they can be challenged. All right. Doesn't restrict you, but if you appoint people who that you're not happy about, you can be challenged on them. Think it through. So then when we come back to vote on this law, then we're done. If you want to take to retreat and do it properly, but my suggestion for now is that if you take out some extension tape, then it addresses all the problems.
The committees of the board are not necessarily members of the board. They use all sorts of expertise out there to address the particular issue that the board
has. Thank you, Victor. The thing that you've got to take into account is that you don't appoint the committee, the board members, and then you have committees of the board, populated by people who don't qualify to do the work of the board. That's the only thing that we must balance. Let's keep to the level of this chat. So I'm sorry to just interrupt you, some people can see that everybody wants to participate here. And we allow them the participation. This is your time now. After you, we'll just be adopting the law.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the Science and Technology Portfolio Committee. Thank you for inviting my team here. I just want to correct a view that may be held about this program. We are not here to try and criticize government. What we are here to try and get across is that without engineering leadership in this country, government and business leadership do not have the technical expertise to create the solutions to poverty and joblessness that we require. And this is what our presentation is all about. My technical team comprises Mr. Chris Ellis, the gentleman in the grey suit. He was chief engineer who headed the development of the latest Bantam pickup. Mr. Denver Bond in the black suit, who has for the past 30 years been project manager and development of the introduction of every Mazda and Ford vehicle in South Africa. Mr. Robert McGeegan, cooking over here. He's the manufacturing specialist used by members of this team to restructure a multi-billion rand factory at the request of the South African government. Myself, Revel Wood, who was at Ford Product Engineering Office, and because of a relationship formed with the Ford directors, was hired to provide an industrial R&D plan to address poverty and joblessness. Peter and Chris Wood, they are members of the team as specialists in software development and architecture. The team who will assist in implementing the plan to address joblessness within communities is the 47-year-old South African Housewives League, represented by Chairwoman Ms. Bongi Mavuka and other members there. Okay. We will handle the first points of the agenda very quickly and then proceed to the presentation, which is about creating manufacturing industries within poor communities using the provision of houses and classrooms to kickstart general manufacturing. The reasons why poverty, unemployment, crime and violence are increasing problems in South Africa but decreasing in other countries is as a result of, in 1980s, Ford, GM and Goodyear collectively and privately investigated what could be done about joblessness, skills training and housing for black people. and Ford developed a manufacturing business plan based upon my research. There has been no support from business leaders and government to implement this plan to address poverty. In 1987, a director from local business leadership informed directors and engineers from Ford, General Motors, and Goodyear, and GWD that we did not understand manufacturing. And in 2007, the CEO of Business Leadership South Africa, supported by his chairman, tried to convince the CEO of Business Unity South Africa that Ford, General Motors, and Goodyear and Siemens were incompetent in developing manufacturing plans. On the 4th of April 2008, Siemens stated to Business Leadership South Africa, "We believe that the initiative is good and that it can contribute to achieving the socio-economic goals of our country." In 1994, Minister Naidu's office referred to directors and engineers from Ford, Siemens, and GWD as elitists who had no part to play in South Africa's future. Mr. Alan Hirsch, then in the DTI, was convinced by the sociology department at WITS that the Mine Workers Development Agency knew more about VAT manufacturing than the companies mentioned. And in 2005, Treasury's Macroeconomic Policy Unit came to this similar conclusion. This summarizes the 20-odd page letter GWD sent to the Speaker and to the Science and Technology Portfolio Committee, dated the 30th of May 2008, which revealed that government and local business leaders do not have the engineering skills to create the manufacturing industries SA requires to accelerate economic growth. In 1984, the Ford GWD plan satisfied every aspect of the Center of International Development's latest report to ASGISA, stating regarding manufacturing development to accelerate growth. This plan has been 100% BEE since 1984. The following figures are taken from the final report from the Center for International Development at Harvard, presented to ASGISA, and support that leadership does not have the engineering skills to reverse this pattern and accelerate growth through manufacturing. Since 1960 to 2004, the real value of South African exports grew by only 0.7% annually, in contrast to Argentina, 169%, Australia, 238%, Botswana, 1,887%, and Malaysia, 4,392%. South Africa is 6 million jobs behind America, Eastern Europe, and Eastern Asia, at similar levels of development. Government and local business leadership are impotent next to the engineering plans dominating 21st century industry, and this has resulted in the loss of nearly 1 million jobs since 1984 to 2004. The next point we raised was the necessity to incorporate engineering leadership to drive RDP policy. Malaysia, India, China, and Korea, economic recovery was engineering-led. The Harvard Business School report on China facing the 21st century spelled this out as follows. Mao's longtime lieutenant, Deng Xiaoping, was asked to stabilize the economy. Deng brought back technical experts and the economy quickly recovered. Those reforms had an immediate impact and production of all types jumped sharply, pushing up wages. Higher incomes created demand for consumer goods, and local governments began to direct savings into collectively owned manufacturing firms, known as township and village enterprises. Throughout the 1980s, their output grew at an average rate of 30% per year, and by 1995, 23 million PVEs, employed 129 million people, and lifted 430 million people out of poverty in 17 years. The report then stated that very little policy was produced. Instead, engineering drove economic transformation, and policy was written around the successful industries. This is in sharp contrast to what South Africa is trying to do by creating policy and hoping that engineering will follow. Russia tried this method, and in 1972, Ford and Fiat were asked by the Russian government to restructure their truck and car factories, as this method has destroyed them. Engineers reported that Russian bureaucrats were overriding engineering leadership, leading to industrial destruction. This is precisely how governments have reacted to this plan over the past 14 years. And the last report from the International Center for the Development to ESDESA confirms that bureaucratic constraints are inhibiting industrial growth. Local manufacturing is internationally competitive. On the 2nd of June 2007, we presented this plan to Business Unity South Africa and the SA Academy of Engineering, which they supported. And we showed them how, through appropriate business models, local manufacturing can become competitive as other countries are using low-skilled labor to supply international markets successfully. The main reason that prevented the 4GW plan from developing is as follows. The CRD's final report to ESDESA has confirmed every aspect of this plan, which since 1994 to 2008, government has rejected, and they are: low-skilled workers can be used to manufacture world-class products. Appropriate business models have to be created. These business models must be replicated. Economic product R&D must be stimulated. We are now showing how engineering can lead a policy in creating a manufacturing foundation to begin to lift the majority above poverty while expanding our manufacturing base. I introduced Denver Bond, a long-time associate from our Ford Product Engineering days, who will present a business plan to do the job.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jervis. The other who's are there, your junior?
Pardon? Yeah, they're my juniors.
Oh, okay. You want to inform me?
Sorry.
And I was impressed with you introducing the gentleman in terms of their colors of their food. Something that I must learn from you. Please go ahead.
Thank you.
Yes.
Before going ahead, say, can you clarify for me the difference between joblessness and unemployment?
Well, it's the same thing. Is just using the, we use the word unemployment or jobless, but people without jobs are people who are unemployed. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please go ahead.
Chairman and members of the committee, good day to you. This presentation reviews the implications of establishing a factory to manufacture low-cost houses. The project will offer employment, skills transfer, and houses to needy communities. This project requires total investment of $29.5 million for a time-adjusted rate of return of 20%. In return, the single project will deliver 1,670 houses per annum, create 200 jobs with skills training, and offer factory ownership. Review of this project will demonstrate the opportunities to expand the specific concept on a national scale. To fast-track development engineers into national projects that ensure the rapid upgrade of semi-literate, low-skilled township and rural village communities to first-world competencies in the realm of manufacturing and construction as a practical solution to joblessness. To create jobs through an industrial business plan designed to grow South Africa with a growing 4 to 6 billion manufacturing industry where economic development is most required. So the program vision that we have is to provide sustainable employment and low-cost housing to needy communities. To achieve this by the manufacture of houses in a factory and delivery to a prepared site for erection, to develop the production tooling, the operating processes and skills training to allow these factories to be owned and staffed by the community, to provide ongoing support for problem resolution, to expand the concept and develop multiple factories around South Africa to manufacture these houses and provide employment in communities. The product that we're talking about is a proposed house of 55 square meters manufactured with composite cement insulated walls and an insulated ceiling. Accommodation comprises two bedrooms, a lounge, a kitchen, and a bathroom. The facilities include a bath, shower, toilet, basement, sink, shelving, geyser, gas burner, lighting, plug points, and all utilities connected. What we want to present is a livable house for that family to move into. The houses will be manufactured in sections and will be transported to a prepared site for assembly and completion. And houses will comply with SAB 0400 and be fully bondable. What we have on there is a picture of a typical house. Bottom right-hand corner is the 55 square meter house, as also in the top right-hand corner. But you can see with different facades, you can make the house different. They all don't have to be the same. Next slide. So the product is really projected to be better than the current low-cost and conventional house in the following important attributes. The concept is a beam-on-tile foundation will ensure that houses do not crack in all soil types. We have insulation in the wall cavities and the ceiling, and we believe we'll have superior thermal insulation. Also, the house specification and finish levels are projected to exceed the customer's expectations. The production concept is suitable for the production of classrooms, for small shops, and other community-based building and facility requirements. As Greville mentioned, the development team, and again, just very broadly, Greville, broad technical experience within the fields of power generation, automotive component design, vehicle development, medical technologies, real estate, property development, and construction. And as mentioned, his political passion is persuading government and parliament to develop practical solutions to poverty and joblessness. Chris Ellis, my colleague, is an independent 40 years export of component engineering, vehicle design, advanced engineering, and advanced manufacturing. He held the position of chief program engineer responsible for design, for development, and manufacture of the 2002 Bantam half-ton pickup program, which is a unique local product designed and manufactured in South Africa. Myself, as an independent, I have 40 years export and product development and program management. I've had program responsibility for implementing multiple vehicles over the last 30 years. My functional scope of experience includes strategy, project viability, program execution and control. Rob McGeegan, who introduced as well, as a private consultant with extensive expertise in improving industrial business processes. His clients have included Dulux Chemical Services, Continental Tires, and Industic. And in the Industic coating plant, he improved their operating systems to zero defects. The business concept that we are looking at a macro level, it's an industrial business plan designed to provide a growing multi-billion manufacturing industry where economic development is required with low-skilled township, rural, village communities where labor and not capital will be the means of wealth creation. Initially, we plan to implement a development facility to validate and refine the production process, to document all the processes, to demonstrate the quality levels, and to deliver production-ready concepts, and then transition into a fully functional housing factory where we will implement skills training, and commence with the manufacture and delivery of a manufactured house. Next slide. We then plan to expand that concept and develop community-operated factories in multiple locations for the mass production of complete houses. We see that initial funding for factories can be provided by IDC or NEF loans. Housing factories will provide skills training and employment. Government subsidies at current funding levels will contribute significantly towards both the housing and employment and will generate profit and tax. An employment benefit structure that contributes towards factory ownership is also planned. The overall market, just a brief overview of the market. GWD will focus on the manufacture and delivery of subsidized, affordable, and bonded mass housing schemes for government at a national, provincial, and local level, and to financial institutions. Chris and Becky stated that government was able to provide about 260,000 houses per annum in his 2007 State of the Nation address. With a projected backlog of between 2.2 and 2.5 million units, this represents an opportunity for delivery of a cost-efficient quality houses at an accelerated pace. The proposed manufacturing process delivers 7 houses a day, or 1,670 houses per annum. Now, this supply only represents about 0.6% of the market requirements, and it will offer major replication and expansion opportunities in the future. Again, in the housing industry, what is the competition? Who actually manufactures? And housing supply is currently supported by large construction groups, SMEs, various BEE groups, and small contractors. But the industry is hampered by lack of capacity, and with this really primarily in skills. But as a comparison to what we're proposing, an example of a small cap company listed is RBA Holdings. It has a market capitalization of 155 million. It's able to construct between 1,200 and 2,000 houses per annum. Now, all construction utilizes traditional building methods, but does not develop a sustainable economic community. The manufacture and assembly of a house under factory conditions offer advantages relative to high output, repeatability supporting high levels of quality, improved cost efficiencies of material and labor. It has a low dependency on weather conditions, and the enhanced skill set has portability versus the conventional construction industry. The manufacturing strategy is to develop and maintain a world-class manufacturing facility and team and production management system. The plant will maximize the use of low-skilled labor with semi-automated processes where quality standards dictate. And to support this strategy, it's essential to implement the project in two phases. We transition from a development phase where we implement and develop a development facility, which is proposed at Wilkesbraat in Gauteng, to finalize the designs, to prove out the tooling and processes, to be production ready, and to manufacture sample houses for validation and approval ahead of the full-scale manufacturing facility. We then want to move to the production phase where we plan to build a factory. We're suggesting either Gauteng or Eastern Cape, where we facilitate this, commission, and start this up through a pilot process and transition into a mass production manufacturing plant. I merely put on the screen a factory process layout. The total process has been identified and documented of how we need to structure this, and that just is part of our feasibility study. Next slide. In terms of a quality plan, central to the manufacturing strategy is the training of people, and will include learnerships, skills process training, and extensive implementation of a quality management system. The manufacturing facility will comply with ISO 9000 in quality, the plant ISO and ISO 14001 for environmental, and OSHS 18001 for health and safety. A comprehensive plan will be implemented to establish specifications for all the materials and implement procedures for all direct and indirect processes of running the manufacturing operation. A resource plan and structure requiring a total headcount of 207 people, which comprises 66 staff and 141 hourly positions, has been identified, and headcount will largely be sourced from the adjacent community. With the potential to expand the sanctuary concept into multiple locations, there is a need to provide technical support and expertise, and rather than costly travel, processes will be developed to provide technical support via video audio streams to remote locations for timely and efficient resolution. Timing for this project, we have completed our feasibility studies on this, and we are in the stage whereby we are ready to start the project with a development phase which would take 6 to 8 months. We want to start building the first factory by month 6, which will take 4 to 5 months to complete, and by month 10 initiate the pilot production, with transitioning into full production by month 13, or essentially within 1 year. To give you an overview of the financial implications of this, the revenue equation we've assumed in our business model, if you look in the top left rings, 49,502 is the retail price as we start the project. The project is being evaluated over a 10-year cycle with an average annual production of 1,669 houses per annum. And as mentioned, the 55-square-meter house would sell for 49,500 with that full specification as a livable house. Investment for the project, total investment of $29.5 million. The initial phase requiring just over $12 million for the firm up, the development, and another $17.3 million to go into the production phase, giving us that total. I'd just like to mention that any additional factories would obviously be of the order of 17 to 18 billion as we progress. Profitability, the contribution cost, the actual cost that we see of our manufactured house is of the order of 37,378 rand, and profitability on a cycle average basis is due to provide a per unit profit of 3,294, or profit before tax of 5.5 million on an annual basis. We did financial sensitivities, and in the top box, just looking at volume, our factory is structured to produce 7 houses a day. Even at 5 units a day, or 1,200 units per annum, it still gives a return of 3.9 million profit and a 12% time-adjusted rate of return. So it's relatively insensitive to a volume change. Similarly, the investment, it has low sensitivity to investment. At an additional 10 million on the total project, 4.5 profit at a 12% time adjusted rate of return. We see that material cost is sensitive, and that would cause us as a group to ensure that cost control is very important, and cost reduction, obviously, to control your costs to meet your financial objectives. So what are the opportunities we see in this project? It's first of all a visible commitment to a community by government for houses, for jobs, and for accelerated delivery. We see creating manufacturing skills and structures suitable for further product development and export potential. And we see widespread application to multiple communities. There are also risks associated with this project. At a technical level, productionizing thin wall cement cladding with low steels is a technical concern. However, the process is well established both internationally and locally, and the risk assessment is low. Relative to timing, the setup to implement the plan, recognizing bureaucracy, we know that things take time to implement, so there is a timing risk in that respect. Additionally, we see the recruitment and skills training might also take longer than we have specifically planned, which has a timing risk to the program. At a business level, high value, high output processes will require payment on delivery process to minimize working capital. What we're talking about is a factory that is delivering houses at 7 a day, 140 a month. We really need a payment system to allow quick payment, otherwise we end up with a major cash flow issue. The other business risk, the project team will deliver to a performance contract. At a political level, we also see the rivalry for jobs in the factory within the community, preventing the plan from developing maybe as it should, where we find that there might be unfulfilled job seekers, and we would hope to use Housewives League to give us assistance in this regard in terms of identifying people within communities. Also, the delivery expectation versus the implementation time lag will also potentially be a risk at the political level. So in broad summary, what are we offering? We're offering a business plan to manufacture 755 square meter houses per day that are competitively priced and bondable. We're offering delivery of setup of a manufacturing facility with all of the tooling and processes developed ready for production. The recruitment and training of the labor force to manufacture, to administer, and to deliver a quality product. We want to deliver ongoing support for daily production problem resolution. And we see that this is private or community ownership. We want ongoing development of new manufactured products for domestic and export markets, because after the lifetime of the factory, it's important to continue manufacturing additional goods for local and for export markets. And we believe we have a concept for implementation at a national level. The community-focused social and economic benefits include much-needed jobs and income for members of the community, accelerated housing delivery, a contribution towards delivery of Millennium Development Goals. A sense of ownership will minimize social economic crimes, and we believe lowering the cost of housing. So what do we need? We need recognition that manufacturing and engineering focused policy is an imperative for addressing sustainable job creation, skills development, housing delivery, and economic growth. We need funding to implement the project to fully demonstrate the business model. We need the availability of proclaimed land with services that is ready for housing construction so that we can physically start. We need a pay on delivery process to minimize cash flow within this project, and a direct link with government housing to iron out and circumvent the problems that we have. I have a number of backup attachments, but I'm not proposing to go through this specifically at this time, but would welcome if there are any questions that anyone would ask, in which case I might refer to some backup, or alternatively, we can move on.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Quite useful and impressive, I must say. Can I just check if members want to ask some questions? And I do realize that there is somebody else who will just give some comments. From my side, in your previous correspondence, you've raised your frustrations and so on, but particularly the CSIR. What has been the take of your relationship with the CSIR? What is the problem? Second, funding. Who do you want? You want the funding to come from government? You want to take a loan or the IDC? Or I'm just trying to check what is the holder. And lastly, do you have a house that's already there that you can go and see, or
you know, you still in your head, any structure on the ground.
Yeah.
I see the pictures, but is there a place where I can go and say, these are the houses that you built?
Okay. First of all, the CSIR, when we put this plan down in 1985, with Goodyear, Ford, and GM, the CSIR was very much involved, and they were very much behind what we were doing, and they even provided all the certificates to say that the plan was 100% in accordance with the South African Bureau of Standards. And as soon as Ford and General Motors left, they tried everything they can possibly do to sabotage it. And on numerous occasions, we had altercations with the CSIR trying to destroy this plan. And in 1996, I wrote to the chairman of CSIR pointing this out, and he simply ignored us. This again occurred sometime later. But in 2005, after the CSIR admitted to the Department of Housing that they did not have the technical skills to show government how to use housing to create economic sustainable communities, which is the prime objective of housing policy as spelled out in the Act of 1997, the CSIR admitted at the Department of Housing that they did not have the skills to do this. I had been writing to the Department of Housing since 1995 telling them that the CSIR did not have these skills and that government would not be able to create economically sustainable communities from the developing of housing. The CSIR admitted to this in 2004 in front of the head of the legal department of the Department of Housing, who will confirm this. When this was admitted, the engineering advisor to the Minister of Science and Technology, Professor Roy Marcus, wrote to the director of the CSIR, Dr. Hoffi Marie, and said to him, please evaluate this business plan. Hoffi Marie simply refused to do this, as the CSIR has been doing since 1987.
I'm just very concerned because I've gone through some of the letters that you wrote.
Yes.
What is the hang-up on the road? Our interest is just to ensure that we've got the engineering and technical capacity to deal with the problem.
Correct.
Housing is not our major focus.
No.
It's just, we've got a housing portfolio committee.
Yes.
Then I would gladly also want to then to link up with them, give them some of the things and see how they want to proceed.
Yes.
But answer the two questions before I give you another question. The funding question. And I see the picture, but have you suddenly put it somewhere, or...?
Okay, let me handle the funding problem. The funding problem started in 1995, when President Mandela put this plan into the Premier of Gauteng's office, Tokyo Sekhwale's office. Tokyo's three advisors from housing, from the Department of... Jabu Moleketi was one of them. There were quite a few of them. All told the Premier at the time that government did not have a policy that could accommodate the development of a practical manufacturing solution to address poverty and joblessness. And therefore, there were no funds available in any of the institutions that they had developed. SPAR, NICHA, the RDC, none of them could fund the pilot development of this manufacturing plan. That I just want to correct a view here. This is not a housing scheme. This is a manufacturing scheme to create general manufacturing in South Africa, where we use housing and classroom manufacturing as a catalyst to kickstart manufacturing. And then, as I'll show just now, we progress into other forms of manufacturing. So it is not a housing scheme. I wish to stress this. It is a general manufacturing scheme where housing are the means by which we started. China used tractors and farming implements to start their manufacturing processes that produced 129 million jobs in 17 years. So China identified and that they had to find a manufacturing catalyst that could be used to kickstart manufacturing countrywide. We have identified, we've got good farming implement manufacturers in South Africa, John Deere and Massey Ferguson and all these guys. So we don't need farming implements. We've got them. So we have to find some other common product that we could use on a national basis to get a groundswell of factories countrywide. And the only thing we have in South Africa that can do the job after nearly 40 years research, because this program actually started in 1967, and where we try to ascertain what type of product can we create that will, could create this national program. And it took us nearly 20 years to work out that it was housing and classroom development. So in 1984, we had come to the conclusion at Ford that it was housing and classroom development that would be the catalyst in South Africa to create labor-intensive industry countrywide. Now, from 1995 to 2005, where the macroeconomic policy unit in the Treasury could not identify a policy within government to support the development of a practical solution to poverty and joblessness. And that's why we have come and stuck. There is just no means to fund this project.
Okay, I understand, I take your point that you make.
Yeah.
I mean, but where you do an injustice to that plan is where you start emphasizing on how the house is key. So I would suggest that as you go forward, you actually emphasize that you are about manufacturing and housing and classroom development are the key.
The key to
it. As you say, the top part of the thing.
Yes.
You see? And if you present like that, then it doesn't.
Okay.
Any doubt in our minds that it's
right.
Have
we cleared that point?
Yes, but have you got any houses or anything?
Well,
I see the pictures. I mean, a picture you can take from anywhere.
Right.
Go back.
From the very beginning. Yeah. Okay. This we put out in 1984. Sorry, let me come back. I'll come back to this. Okay. Here is a factory house that we... This is the prototype house we put down in 1984. We set it up in a factory. We developed it with the CSIR. We've still got all the documentation from the CSIR from 1984. And this is how we set up the timber frame to evaluate it, to make sure it was all our drawings were correct. We didn't have computers or CAD systems in those days to correct everything on the computer. So we had to check the whole thing out physically first. Next picture. Then we had to check out how we were going to insulate it. We're not going to insulate it like this anymore. We got better insulation today and much cheaper. And then we had to work out how we clad it, because the big problem in 1984, the concept of thin cement sheeting for housing cladding was foreign in this country, although it's been used around the world for the last 30 years in 1984. In South Africa, it had a lot of resistance. But there you can see it, Kanikla. And this is how we trucked the whole thing to the site. In production, in the factory, it will be fully trimmed with all the glazing, fully painted, everything. We didn't know how it was trucked. Mm-hmm. That's why we didn't glaze it or paint it in the first. So this is 1985, next one. This is what a manufactured foundation looks like. They produce nearly a million of these manufactured foundations in the United States, and they've been doing this for the last 30 years. Next one. What happened here, you can see the rear section of the house being loaded onto the site. Now what happened here is that up here and up here the chain snared, and so we had to shake the house, and the house actually dropped onto the foundation. And it didn't crack. This shows you how strong the house actually is. You couldn't drop a normal house at all. It would just break apart. Next one. Here we are lowering the front section into the place. Next one. That's what it looked after 3/4 of an hour. So the house was erected in 3/4 of an hour in 1984. That's what it looked like. It was painted and glazed. That's what it looks like inside. And that's the equivalent in a brick house. The normal matchbox is 51 straight now, and the normal matchbox is from 1950s, the apartheid government built thousands of them next time. And that's what it looked like after 8 years. And it's still up. I didn't want to sell it, but Ford gave it away to someone, and it hasn't been looked after at all. So it's still nothing wrong with it. I mean, it's still there. It's perfect. But it needs
paint.
It hasn't been painted since we put it down in 1990.
Actually, it's just finished the PLC and it'll be fine.
Yeah,
I went to it about 2 weeks ago and had a look at it.
Where?
In Port Elizabeth.
What
Tumble Street.
So, 24 years
ago, you guys just before you leave, we did address and the owner.
Robert can get it for us and we'll
come visit the MP.
Yeah,
I'll take it there.
Yeah, Robert
will take it. That's what he said about any information.
No. Robert stays in Port Elizabeth.
Yeah,
he'll take
you there. Yeah. No, I'm not going there. I want people in Port Elizabeth.
Okay, fine. No,
we'll do that then.
Yeah, okay. We'll do that. Okay, next one. All right, and you've seen that. So, yes, we have put him up, but the thing to remember, this house is actually irrelevant. And I'll tell you why it's irrelevant. Sorry, just go back. The United States of America produces nearly 1 million of these every year because this is how America produces their houses. They use exactly the same process, timber framing and fiber cement coating. Every house you see in the United States of America, it may have a brick veneer on the outside. You can put a brick veneer on the outside of this one as well. But 1 million houses are built every year in America through this method. In other words, although they don't, the majority are not produced in a factory, the majority of the timber frames and the cladding are all produced in a factory. And they are then prefabricated, and then the timber frames are taken to site and bolted together on site. There is very little site work done on housing in America today. It's all prefabricated in factories. Exactly what we are proposing here. So if you really want to see an example of what we are trying to do, just look at any American magazine and the 1 million houses that are produced in the United States of America. It is exactly the same. And in fact, the South African Bureau of Standards specification 082 on timber frame housing has been borrowed from the United States and the Canadian specifications. And that was done in the mid-1980s.
Thank you very much.
Can
you have any other questions?
You
want
to
go? No. Thanks for coming. What do you want us to do?
Can Denver just finish?
No, they're finished. I would like to just
give you another two slides or three slide presentation. Just some personal observations. This is Denver Barnes. I commenced my career in automotive industry in the mid-60s with local content was by mass in the automotive industry, and local product development activities provided support for local manufacture of many commodities. The era of political isolation further strengthened the manufacturing industry in terms of self-reliance, and at this time, almost every commodity relating to the automotive manufacturing industry was manufactured in South Africa. But I believe that current policies have allowed this technology base to be superseded by globalization strategies, with the result that many commodities, parts, and systems are no longer being manufactured in South Africa. I see this manifested in two directions. There have been small, highly skilled commodity companies that have been absorbed into internationals where the technology skills become centralized abroad, and we are losing the skills in South Africa. And manufacturing capacities are also rationalized in global sourcing, often limiting production in South Africa to lower value technology products. The next slide is just really automotive industry, and we all know catalysts are the exports, exhaust components and leather, but this limits really what is happening in manufacturing relating to the automotive industry, that there's virtually very, very little export. So an extract from the trade statistics of 2007, vehicle parts, we import 40 billion, but export 38 million. Big disparity. Electrical machinery, we import 53.9 billion, we export 11.7 billion. My only observation is that there is a great need to grow the manufacturing infrastructure locally, and what we are suggesting is that the housing manufacturing project just represents a small step in a broad manufacturing-led economy. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm glad that the Department of Science and Technology is also here, just to, because we say we don't have enough engineers and so on in the country here, it was demonstrating the pilot itself. I see, yes, what do you want us to do? Because the pilot was pilot, right? But since 1967, we come with a concept and you just have 1 hour to show for it. Because of the frustrations that you had and so on. Tell us what you want us to do exactly, and let's tell you that you are able to do it, or if there are problems, what are the problems?
There are no problems in implementing the plan. And this is a far simpler plan to implement than the design of a new motor car. And yeah, sitting in this room here, we've got three people who've been intimately involved in the design of two of South Africa's most successful motor cars, vehicles ever designed in this country, the Cortina pickup, which was exported to Britain and became a biggest seller there, and the Bantam. This is a very much simpler program next than designing and developing new motor cars. So there is no problem as far as that is concerned. The problem is simply finance. On the one hand, and on the other hand, there has been tremendous resistance from the business leadership in South Africa to this. They have gone out of their way to ensure that we can't raise capital for this, or that they simply insult the thing and say it can't work without any sound technical basis. Now, the main reason in the 80s and the 90s why business did this was because your big companies thought that when there was a change in South Africa, government would be queuing up to the big business construction companies asking them to build millions of houses. This never came about. And so they didn't want to see manufacturing come into this country. So the Anglo-Americans, the Anglo-Vols, and the mining houses who control the construction industries just set up a brick wall against this. Yes.
That is very important and frustrating.
Yeah.
Oh, way forward. What?
Way forward. Yeah. We need, would you like to explain the way forward? Okay. We need, initially, 12 million rand to put down the pilot. From the pilot, we need another 17 million. The 17 million, yes, we can get through the National Empowerment Fund. But it's 12 million that up until, I believe, quite recently, government doesn't have the mechanism to fund that 12 million. The Industrial Development Corporation can't. The National Empowerment Fund can't. Denver has tried to reorganize the business plan, because we were always going to government and saying, look, we need 12 million for a pilot, and then the next factory, each factory will be around about 12, 17 million, whatever it was. And that was our stumbling block. So Denver has now come up with a business plan that shows if you include the initial 12 million rand into the funding of the first factory, that factory still remains profitable. So, and that has just been arrived now. We've done it in the last few weeks. But up until a few weeks ago, we couldn't fund this because there was no mechanism within government to fund a pilot.
So you want us to assist you to get a third meeting?
Yes.
Okay. Two things. We're going to ask the Department of Science and Technology that reports to us.
Yes.
They've got what they call the Innovation Fund.
We know that the Innovation Fund very well.
Okay. And we want to work some legislation to fund innovation.
Yes.
Just to ensure that you exchange business cards, the leader is Dr. Nekoma Kudu. We're
yes.
going to give you the whole month of July.
Yes.
To engage with the MCSIR, whoever in that field.
Yes.
And to try and find you the term leader. If
Thank
they can't, they must come back and tell us that they have not been able to deal with the debt. Is that that? Can we leave it at that?
We can leave it at
yes,
that. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank
you. You should be able to direct them to the right government structure. All you're saying, we would want you to give us feedback in August
yes.
as to how far you've got with this project. You just say that if it's technically and otherwise not sound, in other words, if you say you're finding this thing not doable technically, then that's a problem. But if it's technically sound and the engineers have done their job, the problem is funding. Science and technology is not able to use the innovation fund. They're not able to do the startup. I'm sure you know DGI, the people you can refer them to the right people, and so on. But just facilitate it. Or just tell us that it's happening or it's not happening. We must close it at some point.
Yes, I quite agree with you.
I don't want to respond. I want for that issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
you can give us a response so that we can read it. But if you have a response, you say, no, you know, we don't fund us. We're not next door. It's an inadequate response. The response of being able to say, these are the people, you know your colleagues in the department, these are the people who give us the letters, and actually go to them and say, listen, everyone who has given us those letters, we are able to give them. Can you give us them?
Thank you.
All
right. Thank you very much.
Assistant Hans, I want to adopt the law now. Let me take from Mr. Elsie, yourself, Madam Farida, Robert, and then Madam.
Okay, with me, the Kenny from halfway through the presentation, I now understand that we are wooden structures with high core prefabricated.
Yes.
Very much like, I think, what you have at Acacia Park.
In where?
Acacia Park, the Polymetry Village.
Okay.
Similar yeah. concept. And we've had lots of trouble with those structures. I'm not sure the nature of the structure.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering if there's been a long-term study of the durability of the structures. They last in our hospital.
Don't be now to answer.
Okay.
Just relax.
Okay.
I don't know about SABS.
All right.
South African Bureau of Standards. But do they put their stamp of approval also on houses?
All right.
And if so, have they done so in this case?
Yes.
Do these things last? Because if you can't take it apart, you think they're going to fall down anymore. You don't have.
Yeah.
Okay. That's those are the questions you respond. Ms. Mohamed?
Just a comment here. I just want us to remind the committee that we can only be the hearing and listen to the motivation. And perhaps we should allow the department to consider with deep knowledge with regard to the engineering and all other issues. Because I think it's important for us to recognize that from 1967, if it has been bouncing from one department to another, there must be very good reasons for that. Our departments don't throw out projects just at will and hunky-dory kind of thing. So I think there needs to be some kind of communication, as you rightly said. But really speaking, we have to also take on board that this model, perhaps, I think I heard you say, sir, that it was copied or replicated from USA and Canada. I do have some reservations with regard to that. We are in South Africa. I know that if you get a model home from, let's say, Alaska, you would not apply to our conditions in South Africa. That's one thing that I want us to apply on. I don't think we have a mandate to say that we can get the funding. It's your prerogative to apply for the funding and win that funding with your own motivation. Also, I want to ask apply our minds to with regard to your motivation in terms of how do we answer or respond to poverty and job creation. My first critique would be, are you a VEE, triple VEE manufacturing company? Because if you are, then you would immediately respond to community ownership in terms of how you would encompass these. I really find it quite amazing that you would probably want to employ semi-literate people and low-skilled people in the rural community. Somehow, it's a very noble idea. Okay. I would like to see it really being realized through the when your project is really on the ground. Another thing is that what I want us to say, that in terms of your model home, you know, I think government could build a home for 15,000 in terms of the ordinary big home. What is the motivation for this paradigm shift to now come to from a 15,000 home and come to a home which is a wooden structure which is 45,000. That's something that I would want to understand. But I would want us to actually really think about the issue that whilst you are motivating a business plan to a committee, I don't think it ends here. Really speaking, you've got to win that business plan to whichever principle you want. We can do oversight if there is something that's wrong that happens. That's our function. But if there's a wrong issue or something that is being ignored, then we could do oversight in that regard. I would talk to you.
Thank you, before.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I share the same sentiment with a honorable AC, thinking of Acacia Park. Last year, where we live at Acacia Park, they had to revamp those houses by, you know, you've got what's it now? The foundation, they fill up that for us to be able to live there because those plants were breaking down and they were old. So I use the same thing that you have. What's your foundation made of? If you ask this question, that one. And secondly, don't you think that maybe at a certain point in time, Kenya to build a cashroom in one of the schools in the Eastern Cape to showcase your staff? But think about it. And yeah, you said there were durable. My problem was the durability. And you are talking about manufacturing. Apart from houses, apart from motor industry, apart from agricultural implements, as you told us, what other things can be manufacturable so that we begin to innovate and to build the economy? From your point of view.
I want to really move away from this. Okay, let me give you a... We'll come back to you, so just a quick report. But what I want to say is the following for Mr. Mokka. Before we just say that for sure your model is the Acacia Park model, then it's important that you must also go to Acacia Park, get permission to do that, to see what they are making for, so that don't respond in isolation. You can't respond to those special models in the Acacia Park house. Okay? And second, you see, we're not here to frustrate members of the public. Mm-hmm. Parliament is here to assist you if your model is correct and to direct you through the right channel. You see? And if you've written to all these departments to ask as well, we've made it
and understanding that I was listening to you. We've listened to you, either we can do something about it or nothing about it. You see? But before we take the latter, we are giving the department that works with us, particularly with the skill that we need, engineering skill, and the technology. Just check if this thing is not, I didn't call it another name, a phone call. I won't do that. You see, if this is something that really is South African manufacturers, because there are a lot of intellectual property that is going outside of the country because we do not support local. Alright? So that's what we want to check, and to give you the right places to get the funding. So that you either get a yes or a no. That we know that we're going forward or the matter is closed. You see, that's how we want to close it. And it shouldn't take us more than 3 months to finish those things. Okay? So can we take with the local and just go round up? There's another woman, the lady that you introduced, wanted to say something in closing, and I want to adopt the law now.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, just please.
Okay, thank you. Okay, you covered most of what I wanted to say. Just the one part that I need to get clarity on, perhaps not in this session, but when they come back, is how the conversion of skills through housing into more manufacturing-related skills will take place, and how that would be accredited in the process that you foresee.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Doctor, you also want to say something?
Yes, please. Yes. Very clearly, please.